Brogan could feel his cheek twitch as he spread his hands again. "But, Lord Rahl, don't you see? If the Mother Confessor were to be discovered alive, then it would be a great aid to you in your efforts. If she lives, and you could convince her of your sincerity and the necessity of your plan, she would be an invaluable aid to you. If she went along with your demands, then it would carry great weight with the people of the Midlands. Despite what it would appear because of the unfortunate actions of the Council, which in all honesty set my blood to boiling, many in the Midlands greatly respect her, and would be swayed by her endorsement. It might even be possible, and a great coup, if you were to convince her to marry you. I am committed to wed the Queen of Galia. Even so, if she were alive, she could help you." Brogan stroked the scar at the side of his mouth as he fixed his eyes on the man behind the desk. "Do you think it is possible, Lord Rahl, that she be alive?"
"I was not here at the time, but I am told that perhaps thousands of people saw her beheaded. They think she is dead.
While I admit that were she alive, she would be an invaluable help as my ally, that is not the point. The point is, are you able to offer me one good reason why all those people are wrong?"
"Well, no, but I think—"
Lord Rahl slammed a fist to the desk. Even the two huge guards jumped.
"I've had enough of this. Do you think I am stupid enough to be diverted from the cause of peace by this speculation? Do you think I will grant you some special privilege because you would think to offer me suggestions to win over the people of the Midlands? I told you, there are no special favors. You will be treated the same as every other land."
Tobias licked his lips.
"Of course, Lord Rahl, that wasn't my intention.
If you continue on with this quest to find a woman whom thousands saw beheaded, at the expense of your charge to chart the future course of your land, then you are going to end up on the point of my sword." Tobias bowed.
"Of course, Lord Rahl. We will leave at once for our homeland with your message."
"You are doing no such thing. You are going to remain right here."
"But I must deliver your message to the king."
"Your king is dead," Lord Rahl cocked an eyebrow.
"Or did you mean that you were going to go chasing his shadow too, in the belief that he might be hiding out with the Mother Confessor?"
Lunetta chuckled. Brogan darted her a glance, and the laugh cut off abruptly. Brogan realized his smile had vanished. He managed to bring a hint of it back.
"A new king will no doubt be named. That is the way of our land, to be led by a king. It was to him, the new king, that I was going to take the message, Lord Rahl."
"Since any king that was named would no doubt be your puppet, the journey is unnecessary. You will remain at your palace until you decide to accept my terms and surrender." Brogan's smile widened.
"As you wish, Lord Rahl."
He began to draw his knife from the sheath at his belt. Instantly, one of the Mord Sith had a red rod an inch from his face. He froze. Looking up into her blue eyes, he feared to move.
"A custom of my land, Lord Rahl. I meant no threat. I was going to surrender my knife to you to show my intent to comply with your wishes and remain at the palace. It'd be a way of giving my word, a symbol of my sincerity. Would you permit me?"
The woman didn't take her blue eyes from his.
"It's all right, Berdine," Lord Rahl said to the woman.
She withdrew, but only with great reluctance and a venomous glare. Brogan slowly pulled the knife free and gently placed it, handle first, on the edge of the desk. Lord Rahl took the knife and set it aside.
"Thank you, General."
Brogan held his hand out, palm up.
"What's this?" "The custom, Lord Rahl. In my land, the custom is that when you ceremonially surrender your knife, in order to avoid dishonor, the person you surrender it to gives you a coin in return, silver for silver, as a symbolic act of goodwill and peace."
Lord Rahl, his eyes never leaving Brogan, considered it a moment, and at last leaned back and drew a silver coin from his pocket. He slid it across the desk. Brogan reached up, took the coin, and then slipped it into his coat pocket, but not before he saw the strike, the Palace of the Prophets. Tobias bowed.
"Thank you for honoring my customs, Lord Rahl. If there is nothing else, then I will retire to consider your words.
As a matter of fact, there is one more thing. I heard that the blood of the fold holds no favor with magic." He leaned a little closer. "So why is it you have a sorceress with you?" Brogan looked over at the squat figure beside him.
"Lunetta? Why, she be my sister, Lord Rahl. She travels with me everywhere. I love her dearly, gift and all. If I were you, I would not put great weight to the words of Duchess Lumholtz. She be Celtish,
and I hear they be thick with the Order. I have heard it elsewhere, too, from those who are not Celtish. Brogan shrugged. He wished he could get his hands on that cook, so he could cut out her wagging tongue.
You have asked to be judged by your actions, and not by what others say of you. Would you deny me the same? What you hear is beyond my control, but my sister has the gift, and I would not have it otherwise.
Lord Rawl leaned back in his chair, his eyes as penetrating as ever.
There were blood of the fold among the Imperial Order's army that butchered those at Ebenicia.
As well as Daharan's. Brogan lifted an eyebrow.
Those who attacked Ebenicia are all dead. The offer you made tonight is to be a fresh start, is it not? Everyone given the opportunity to make the commitment to your offer of peace?
Lord Rawl nodded slowly.
It is. One last thing, General. I have fought the Keeper's minions, and I will continue to do so. In doing battle with them, I have discovered that they don't need shadows to conceal them. They can be the last person you would expect, and worse, can do the Keeper's bidding without even realizing they are doing so.
Brogan bowed his head.
I, too, have heard it is so.
Make sure the shadow you chase is not the one you cast. Brogan frowned. He had heard a great many things from Lord Rawl that he did not like, but this was the first he did not understand.
I am very sure of the evil I pursue, Lord Rawl. Fear not for my safety.
Brogan began to turn away, but then halted and looked over his shoulder.
And may I offer my congratulations to you on your engagement to the Galleon Queen. I do believe I am becoming addled. I can't seem to keep names in my head. Forgive me. What was her name?
Queen Kaelin Amnell.
Brogan bowed.
Of course, Kaelin Amnell. I will not forget it again.
Chapter 14. Richard stared at the tall mahogany door after it had closed. It was refreshing to see a person with such a guileless nature that she would come to the confessor's palace among so many important, finely dressed people, wearing an outfit made of tattered patches of different colored cloth. Everyone must have thought her mad. Richard looked down at his simple, filthy clothes. He wondered if they thought him mad, too. Maybe he was.
Lord Rawl, Kara asked.
How did you know she was a sorceress?
She was shrouded in her han. Couldn't you see it in her eyes?
The red leather creaked as she leaned a hip against the desk beside him.
We would know a woman to be a sorceress if she tried to use her power on us, but not before.
What is han?
Richard wiped a hand across his face as he yawned.
Her inner power, the force of life, her magic.
Kara shrugged.
You have magic, so you could see it. We could not.
His thumb stroked the hilt of his sword as he answered with an absent grunt. Over time, without realizing it, he had come to an awareness of the aspect of magic in a person. If they were using their magic, he could usually see it in their eyes. Though singular to each person, or perhaps the specific nature of their magic, there was a commonality Richard could recognize. Maybe, as Kara said, it was because he had the gift. Or maybe it was simply the experience of having seen the distinctive, timeless look in the eyes of so many people with magic. Kaelin, Addy, the Bone Woman, Shota, the Witch Woman, Du Shailu, the Spirit Woman of the Baka Banmana, Darkin Rawl, Sister Verna, Prelate Annalina, and countless other Sisters of the Light. The Sisters of the Light were sorceresses, and he had often seen the unique glaze of distant intensity in their eyes when they were joined with their Han. Sometimes, when they were enveloped in a shroud of magic, he could almost see the air about them crackle. There were sisters who seemed to radiate an aura of such power that when they walked past him, the fine hairs at the back of his neck stood on end. Richard had seen that same look in Lunetta's eyes. She had been shrouded in her han. What he didn't know was why she would be standing there, doing nothing, yet touching her han. Sorceresses usually didn't let their han envelop them unless it was to a purpose, the same way he usually didn't draw his sword and its attendant magic without a reason. Maybe it simply pleased her childlike temper, the way those patches of colored cloth did. Richard didn't think so. What concerned him was that it could have been that Lunetta was trying to ascertain if he was telling the truth. He didn't know enough about magic to know for sure if that was possible, but sorceresses often seemed somehow to know if he was being truthful, making it seem that every time he told a lie it couldn't have been any more obvious to them had his hair suddenly burst into flames. He hadn't wanted to take a chance and had been careful not to be caught in a lie in front of Lunetta, especially about Kaelin being dead. Brogan had certainly been interested in the Mother Confessor. Richard wished he could believe he was telling the truth. What he had said made sense enough. Maybe it was just his concern for Kaelin's safety that made him suspicious of everything. "That man looks like trouble waiting to find a roost," he said aloud without intending to. "Would you like us to clip his wings, Lord Rahl?" Berdine flicked her Ajeel on the end of the chain at her wrist and caught it in her fist. She cocked an eyebrow. "Maybe something a little lower," the other two Mord Sith chuckled. "No," Richard said in a tired voice. "I've given my word. I've asked them all to do something unprecedented, something that will forever change their lives. I have to do as I said I would, give them all the chance to see that this is right, that it's for the common good, the best chance for peace." Gratch yawned, showing his fangs, and sat down on the floor behind Richard's chair. Richard hoped the Gar wasn't as tired as he was. Ulic and Egan seemed to ignore the conversation. They stood relaxed, with their hands clasped behind their backs. They seemed to be a match for some of the pillars around the room. Their eyes were not relaxed, however. They constantly surveyed the columns, corners, and alcoves, watching, even though the huge room was empty except for the eight of them around the ornate dais. With a meaty thumb, General Rybish idly burnished the bulbous gold base of a lamp at the edge of the dais. "Lord Rahl, did you mean what you said about the men not taking what they've won?" Richard looked to the general's troubled eyes. "Yes. That's the way of our enemies, not ours. We fight for freedom, not plunder." The general averted his eyes as he nodded his assent. "Do you have something to say about that, General?" "No, Lord Rahl." Richard flopped back in his chair. "General Rybish, I've been a woods guide since I was old enough to be trusted. I've never had to command an army before. I'd be the first to admit that I don't know much about the position I find myself in. I could use your help."
"My help? What sort of help, Lord Rahl?"
"I could use your experience. I would appreciate it if you expressed your opinion instead of holding it back and saying, 'Yes, Lord Rahl. I may not agree with you, and I may get angry, but I'll never punish you for telling me what you think. If you disobey my orders, I'll replace you. But you're free to say what you think of them. That's one of the things we're fighting for.'" The general clasped his hands behind his back. The muscles of his arms glistened under the chainmail, and Richard could see, too, under the rings of metal, the white scars of his rank.
"The Haran troops have a custom of plundering those we defeat. The men expect it.
Past leaders may have tolerated it or even encouraged it, but I will not." His sigh was comment enough to understand.
"As you wish, Lord Rahl."
Richard rubbed his temples. He had a headache from lack of sleep.
"Don't you understand? This isn't about conquering lands and taking things from others. This is about fighting oppression."
The general rested a boot on the gilded rung of a chair and hooked a thumb behind his wide belt.
"I don't see much difference. From my experience, the Master Rahl always thinks he knows best, and always wants to rule the world. You are your father's son. War is war. Reasons make no difference to us. We fight because we are told to, same as those on the other side. Reasons mean little to a man swinging his sword, trying to keep his head."
Richard slammed a fist to the desk. Gratch's glowing green eyes became alert. In his peripheral vision, Richard could see red leather move protectively closer.
"The men who went after the butchers of Ebenicia had a reason. That reason, and not plunder, was what sustained them and gave them the strength they needed in order to prevail. They were a detachment of 5,000 Galleon recruits, who had never before been in battle, and yet they defeated General Riggs and his army of over 50,000 men.
General Rybish's heavy brow drew together.
"Recruits? Surely you're mistaken, Lord Rahl. I knew Riggs. He was an experienced soldier. Those were battle-hardened troops. I've received reports from the sites of those battles. They are grisly in the detail of what happened to those men as they tried to fight their way out of the mountains. They could only have been annihilated in such a fashion by an overwhelming force."
"Then I guess Riggs wasn't as experienced a soldier as he needed to be."
"While you have second-hand reports, I heard the story from an unimpeachable source who was there to see it done. 5,000 men, boys, really, came upon Ebenicia after Riggs and his men were finished butchering the women and children. Those recruits pursued Riggs and took his army down. When it was finished, less than 1,000 of those young men were left standing, but not Riggs nor a single one of his force was left alive." Richard left unsaid that without Kalin there to teach them what needed to be done and lead them into the first battles, directing them in the forge of combat, those recruits probably would have been ground into carrion within a day. At the same time, he knew it was their commitment to see the job done that gave them the courage to listen to her and to go up against impossible odds.
That is the power of motivation, General. That is what men can do when they have a powerful reason, a righteous cause.
A sour expression puckered his scarred face.
Dharans have been fighting most of their lives, and know what they're about. War is about killing. You kill them before they can kill you, that's all. Whoever wins is the one who was right. Reasons are the spoils of victory. When you've destroyed the enemy, then your leaders write down the reasons in books and give moving speeches about them. If you've done your job, then there aren't any of the enemy left to dispute your leader's reasons, at least not until the next war.
Richard raked his fingers through his hair. What was he doing? What did he think he could accomplish if those fighting on his own side didn't believe in what he was trying to do? Overhead, across the plastered ceiling of the dome, the painted figure of Magda Cirrus, first Mother Confessor, Kalin had told him, and her wizard, Merritt, looked down on him, in disapproval, it seemed.
General, what I was trying to do tonight, talking to those people, was about trying to stop the killing. I'm trying to make it possible for peace and freedom to have a chance to take root for good. I know it sounds a paradox, but don't you see? If we behave with honor, then all those lands with integrity who want peace and freedom will join us. When they see we fight to stop the fighting and not simply to conquer and dominate or for plunder, they will be on our side, and the forces of peace will be invincible. For now, the aggressor makes the rules, and our only choice is to fight or submit. But,
he sighed in frustration as he thumped his head back against the chair. He closed his eyes. He couldn't bear to meet the gaze of the wizard Merritt overhead. Merritt looked as if he were about to launch into a lecture on the folly of presumption. He had just publicly declared his intention to rule the world, and for reasons his own followers thought were empty talk. He was suddenly beginning to feel hopelessly foolish. He was just a woods guide turned seeker, not a ruler. Just because he had the gift, he was starting to think he could make a difference. Gift. He didn't even know how to use his gift. How could he be so arrogant as to think this would work? He was so tired he couldn't think straight. He couldn't remember the last time he had slept. He didn't want to rule anyone, he just wanted it all to stop so he could be with Kalin and live his life without any fighting. The night before with her had been bliss. That was all he wanted. General Rybish cleared his throat.
I've never fought for anything before, any reason, I mean, other than my bond. Maybe it's time I tried it your way.
Richard came off the back of the chair and frowned at the man.
Are you just saying that because you think that's what I want to hear?
Well, the general said as he picked with a thumbnail at the carvings of acorns along the edge of the desk.
The spirits know no one would believe this, but soldiers want peace more than most people, I'd expect. We just don't dare to dream about it because we see so much killing that we get to thinking it can't ever end. And if you dwell on it, you'll get soft. Getting soft gets you killed. If you act like you're keen for a fight, it gives your enemies pause, lest they give you a reason. Like the paradox you spoke of. Seeing all that fighting and killing makes you wonder if there's anything to you but doing as you're bidden and killing people. Makes you wonder if you're some kind of monster good for nothing else. Maybe that's what happened to those men who attacked Abinissia. Maybe they just finally gave in to the voice in their head. Maybe, like you say, if we can do this, the killing would finally stop.
He pressed back a long splinter he had worked loose.
I guess a soldier always hopes that once he kills all the people who want to kill him, then he can try laying down his sword. The spirits know that no one hates fighting more than many of those who have to do it.
He let out a long sigh.
But no one would believe that.
Richard smiled.
I believe it.
The general glanced up.
It's rare to find someone who understands the true cost of killing. Most either glorify or are repelled by it. Never feeling the pain of infliction, the agony of responsibility. You're good at killing. I'm glad you don't relish it.
Richard's gaze left the general and sought the consoling gloom of the shadows among the arches between marble columns. As he had told the assembled representatives, he was named in prophecy, in one of the oldest prophecies, in High Dharan, He was called Puergrisa Ostdraka, the bringer of death. He was thrice named, the one who could bring the place of the dead and the world of the living together by tearing the veil to the underworld, the one who brought the spirits of the dead forth, which he did when he used the magic of his sword and danced with death, and, in its most base meaning, one who kills. Verdine clapped Richard on the back, jarring his teeth and breaking the uncomfortable silence.
You didn't tell us you had found yourself a bride. I hope you plan on a bath before the wedding night, or she'll turn you out.
The three women laughed. Richard was surprised to find he had the energy to grin.
I'm not the only one who smells like a horse. If there's nothing else, Lord Rawl, I'd best see to a number of matters.
General Rybish straightened and scratched his rust-colored beard.
Just how many people do you expect there are we'll have to kill to have this peace you speak of?
He smiled crookedly.
So I can know how much farther there is to go before I don't have to have guards watch my back when I lie down for a snooze.
Richard shared a long look with the man.
Maybe they'll come to their senses and surrender and we won't have to fight.
General Rybish grunted a cynical laugh.
If you don't mind, I think I'll have the men sharpen their swords just in case.
He peered up.
Do you know how many lands there are in the Midlands?
Richard thought it over a moment.
As a matter of fact, I don't.
Not all the lands are large enough to be represented in Adendrill, but many of those are still large enough to have men-at-arms. The Queen will know. She'll join us soon and be able to help. Tiny specks of lamplight danced off his chainmail.
I'll start sweeps through the palace guard forces at once, tonight, before they have a chance to organize. Maybe it'll be nice and peaceful that way.
I expect that before the night's over, though, at least one of the guard forces will try to bolt. Make sure there are enough men around the Nicobarisi Palace. I don't want Lord General Brogan leaving the city. I don't trust that man, but I've given my word that he will have the same chance as all the rest.
I'll see to it.
And General, have the men be careful of his sister, Lunetta. Richard felt an odd sympathy for Tobias Brogan's sister, for her innocent-seeming heart. He liked her eyes. He steeled himself.
If they come out of their palace intending to leave, have plenty of archers at strategic locations and in range. If she uses magic, don't take any chances by delay.
Richard already hated this. He had never had to commit men to a battle in which people could easily be hurt or killed. He remembered what the prelate had once told him. Wizards had to use people to do what must be done. General Rybish eyed the silent Ulic and Egan, the Gar, and the three women. He spoke to them past Richard.
1,000 men will be wide awake and a shout away if you need them.
Kara's expression sobered after the general had gone.
You must sleep, Lord Rawl. As Mord Sith, I know when a man is exhausted and about to fall over. You can make your plans to conquer the world tomorrow, after you have rested.
Richard shook his head.
Not yet. I have to write her a letter first.
Verdine leaned against the desk beside Kara and folded her arms.
A love letter to your bride?
Richard pulled open a drawer. Something like that. Verdine put on a coy smile.
Maybe we can help. We will tell you the proper things to say to keep her heart pounding and forget you need a bath.
Raina joined her sisters of the Aegil against the desk, adding an impish laugh that sparkled in her dark eyes.
We will give you lessons in being a proper mate. You and your queen will be happy to have us around for advice.
And you had better listen to us, Verdine cautioned,
or we will teach her how to make you dance to her tune.
Richard tapped Verdine's leg, urging her to move aside so he could get at the drawers behind her. He found paper in the bottom one.
Why don't you go get some sleep?
He said absently as he searched for a pen and ink. You were riding hard, too, trying to catch me, and couldn't have gotten much more sleep than I did. Kara turned her nose up in mock indignation.
We will stand watch while you sleep. Women are stronger than men.
Richard remembered Denna telling him that very thing. Only she hadn't been playful when she said it. These three never let their guard down when anyone was around. He was the only one they trusted when they wanted to practice their social graces. He thought they needed a lot of practice. Maybe that was why they wouldn't give up their Aegil. They had never been anything but Mord Sith, and were afraid they wouldn't be able to do it. Kara leaned over, looking in the empty drawer before he pushed it shut. She flicked her blonde braid back over her shoulder.
She must care greatly for you, Lord Rawl. She is willing to surrender her land to you. I don't know if I would do such a thing for a man, even if he was one such as you. He would have to be the one to surrender to me. Richard made her scoot aside, and at last found pens and ink in a drawer he would have opened first had she not been in the way. "You're right, she cares greatly for me. But as to surrendering her land, well, I haven't told her that part yet." Kara's arms unfolded.
"You mean to say that you have yet to demand her surrender as you have done tonight with the others?"
Richard wiggled the stopper from the ink bottle. "That's one reason I must write this letter at once to explain my plan to her. Why don't you three be quiet and let me write?"
Raina, a look of true concern in her dark eyes, squatted beside his chair. "What if she calls off the wedding? Queens are proud. She may not wish to do such a thing."
A ripple of worry surged through his gut. It was worse than that. These women didn't really understand what he was asking Caelan to do. He was not asking a queen to surrender her land. He was asking the Mother Confessor to surrender all of the Midlands.
"She is as committed to defeating the Imperial Order as I am. She has fought with determination that would make a Mord Sith blanch. She wishes the killing to stop as much as do I. She loves me and will understand the benevolence of what I'm asking."
Raina sighed.
"Well, if she doesn't, we will protect you."
Richard fixed her with such a deadly glare that she rocked back on her heels as if he had struck her.
"Don't you ever, ever even think of harming Caelan. You will protect her the same as you would me, or you can leave right now and join the ranks of my enemies. You are to hold her life as dear as mine. Swear it, on your bond to me, swear it."
Raina swallowed.
"I swear it, Lord Rall." He glared at the other two women. "Swear it."
"I swear it, Lord Rall," they said together. He looked to Ulic and Egan.
"I swear it, Lord Rall," they said as one.
He let slip his belligerent tone.
"All right, then."
Richard placed the paper on the desk before himself and tried to think. Everyone thought she was dead. This was the only way. They couldn't let people know she was alive, or someone might try to finish what the council had thought they had accomplished. She would understand if he could just explain it properly. Richard could feel the figure of Magda Cirrus overhead, glaring down at him. He feared to look up, lest her wizard Merit send down a bolt of lightning to punish him for what he was doing.
Caelan had to believe him. She had told him once that she would die to protect him if necessary in order to save the Midlands, that she would do anything, anything.
Kara sat back on her hands.
"Is the queen pretty?"
Her mischievous smile returned.
"What does she look like? She won't try to make us wear dresses once you're married, will she? We'll obey her, but Mord Sith don't wear dresses."
Richard sighed inwardly. They were only trying to lighten the mood by acting mischievous. He wondered how many people these mischievous women had killed. He reprimanded himself. That wasn't fair, especially coming from the bringer of death. One of them had died this very day trying to protect him. Poor Haley never had a chance against Amriswith. Neither would Caelan. He had to help her. This was the only thing he could think of, and every minute that passed could be a minute too late. He had to hurry. He tried to think of what to say. He couldn't let it out that Queen Caelan was really the Mother Confessor, if the letter fell into the wrong hands. Richard looked up when he heard the door squeak open.
"Verdine, where do you think you're going?" "To find a bed of my own. We will take turns standing watch over you."
She put one hand on a hip, and with the other spun the Ajeel on the chain at her wrist.
"Control yourself, Lord Rall. You will have a new bride in your bed soon enough. You can wait until then."
Richard couldn't help smiling. He liked Berdine's wry sense of humor. "General Rybish said there were 1,000 men standing guard. There is no need." Berdine winked.
"Lord Rall, I know you like me the best, but stop thinking about my behind as I walk and write your letter."
Richard tapped the glass-handled pen against a tooth as the door closed. Kara's brow wrinkled in a frown.
"Lord Rall, do you think that the queen will be jealous of us?"
"Why should she be jealous?" he mumbled as he scratched the back of his neck. "She has no reason."
"Well, don't you think we're attractive?"
Richard blinked up at her. He pointed at the door. "Both of you, go stand by the doors and make sure no one can get in here to kill your Lord Rall. If you're quiet, like Egan and Ulic here, and let me write this letter, you may remain on this side of the door. If not, then you will guard from the other side." They rolled their eyes, but both had smiles as they headed across the room, apparently enjoying the fact that their nettling had finally gotten a reaction from him. He guessed Mord Sith must be hungry for playful banter. It was something they got precious little of. But he had more important things on his mind. Richard stared at the blank piece of paper and tried to think through the haze of weariness. Scratch put a furry paw on his leg and snuggled against his side as Richard dipped the pen in the ink bottle. "My dearest queen," he began with one hand, while patting the paw in his lap with the other. Chapter 15. Tobias scanned the snowy darkness as they slogged through the deepening drifts.
"Are you sure you did as I instructed?"
"Yes, my lord general. I told you, they be spelled."
Behind, the lights of the confessor's palace and the surrounding buildings of the city's center had long ago faded into the swirling snowstorm that had swept down out of the mountains while they had been inside listening to Lord Rawl deliver his absurd demands to the representatives of the Midlands.
"Then where are they? If you lose them and they freeze to death out here, I will be more than displeased with you, Lunetta."
"I know where they be, Lord General," she insisted. "I will not lose them."
She stopped and lifted her nose, sniffing the air.
"This way."
Tobias and Galtero looked at each other and frowned, then turned to follow her as she scurried off into the darkness behind King's Row. Occasionally, he could just make out the dark shapes of the palaces looming in the storm. They provided ghosts of lights and guidance in the directionless void of falling snow. In the distance, he could hear the passing clank of armor. It sounded like more men than a simple patrol. Before the night was out, the Deharans would probably make a move to consolidate their grip on Adendrill. That's what he would do if he were in their place. Strike before your opponents have time to digest their options. Well, no matter, he wasn't planning on staying. Tobias blew the snow from his mustache.
"You were listening to him, weren't you?"
"Yes, Lord General, but I told you I could not tell."
"He'd be no different than anyone else. You must not have been paying attention." "I knew you weren't paying attention. You were scratching your arms, and you weren't paying attention."
Lunetta cast him a quick look over her shoulder.
"He be different. I do not know why, but he be different. I have never felt magic like his before. I could not tell if he be telling every word true or every word a lie, but I think he be telling it true."
She shook her head to herself in wonder.
"I can get past blocks. I always can get past blocks. Any kind. Air, water, earth, fire, ice, any kind. Even spirit. But his."
Tobias smiled absently. It didn't matter. He didn't need her filthy taint to tell. He knew. She mumbled on about the strange aspects of Lord Rawl's magic and how she wanted away from it, away from this place, and how it made her skin itch like never before. He only half listened. She would have her wish to be away from Adendrill after he took care of a few matters.
"What are you sniffing at?" he growled.
"Midden, my lord general. Kitchen midden."
Tobias gripped a fistful of her colored rags.
"Midden? You left them at a midden heap."
She grinned as she waddled along.
"Yes, Lord General. You said you didn't want people around. I not be familiar with the city and did not know a safe place I could send them. But I saw the midden heap on our way to the confessor's palace. No one will be there in the night."
"Midden heap," Tobias harumphed.
"Loony Lunetta," he muttered.
She lost a stride.
"Please, Tobias, do not call me."
"Then where are they?"
She lifted her arm, pointing, and hurried her step.
"This way, Lord General. You will see. This way, not far."
He thought about it as he trudged through the drifts. It made sense. It did make sense. A midden heap was the perfect justice.
"Lunetta, you be telling me the truth about Lord Rawl, aren't you? If you lie to me about this, I will never forgive you."
She stopped and looked up at him. Tears welled in her eyes as she clutched her colored rags.
"Yes, my lord general, please. I be telling the truth. I tried everything. I tried my best."
Tobias stared at her a long moment as a tear ran down her plump cheek. It didn't matter. He knew. He flicked his hand impatiently.
"All right, then, get going. You better not have lost them."
Suddenly beaming, she wiped her cheek, turned back to the way she had been going, and darted off.
"This way, lord general. You will see. I know where they be."
Sighing, Tobias started after her again. The snow was piling up, and at the rate it was coming down, it looked like it was going to be a bad one. No matter, things were turning his way. Lord Rawl was a fool if he thought Lord General Tobias Brogan of the Blood of the Fold was going to surrender like a baneling under hot iron. Lunetta was pointing.
"Over here, Lord General, they be here."
Even with the wind howling at their backs, Tobias could smell the midden heat before he could see it. He shook the snow off his crimson cape when they reached the dark hump lit by the faint lights from palaces beyond the wall in the distance. The snow melted off in places as it fell on the steaming heap, leaving much of its dark shape devoid of even the pretense of purity. He put his fists on his hips.
"So, where are they?"
Lunetta moved close to his side, hiding herself in his lee from the wind-driven snow.
"Stand here, Lord General. They will come to you."
He looked down and saw a well-trodden path.
"A circle spell,"
she cackled softly as she pulled some scraps up around her red cheeks against the cold.
"Yes, Lord General. You said you did not want them to get away, or you would be angry with me. I did not want you to be angry with Lunetta, so I cast them a circle spell. They cannot get away now, no matter how fast they go."
Tobias smiled. Yes, the day was ending well, after all. It had provided obstacles, but with the Creator's guidance, he would overcome them. Now matters were in his command. Lord Rahl was going to find out that no one dictated to the blood of the Fold. Emerging from the darkness, he first saw the swish of her yellow skirts as her wrap was pulled open by a gust. Duchess Lumholtz, the Duke a half-step behind and to her side, trod purposefully toward him. When she saw who was standing beside the path, a glower darkened her painted face. She tugged closed her snow-encrusted wrap. Tobias greeted her with a broad smile.
"We meet again. A good evening to you, madam."
He tilted his head in a slight nod.
"And to you too, Duke Lumholtz."
The Duchess sniffed her disapproval and lifted her nose. The Duke eyed them both with a stern glare, as if he were placing a barrier he defied them to cross. Both marched past without a word and off into the darkness. Tobias chuckled.
"You see, my Lord General, as I promised, they wait for you."
Tobias hooked both thumbs in his belt as he straightened his shoulders, letting his crimson cape billow open in the wind. There was no need to pursue the pair.
"You did well, Lunetta," he murmured.
Before long, the yellow of her skirts appeared again, this time when she saw Tobias, Galtero, and Lunetta standing beside her well-trodden path. A look of shock drew up her eyebrows. She really was an attractive woman, despite the superfluous paint, not girlish at all, though still young, but mature of face and figure, ripe with the proud poise of full womanhood. With deliberate menace, the Duke rested a steady hand on the hilt of his sword as the pair approached. Though ornate, the Duke's sword, Tobias knew, was like Lord Rahl's, not mere decoration. Kelton made some of the best steel in the Midlands, and all Keltans, especially nobility, prided themselves on knowing well its use.
"General Bro— Lord General, madam."
She looked down her nose at him.
"Lord General Brogan, we are on our way home to our palace. I suggest you stop following us and return to yours. It's a foul night to be out."
From beside him, Galtero watched the lace at her bosom rise and fall in ire. When she noticed, she snatched her wrap closed. The Duke noticed too and leaned toward Galtero.
"Keep your eyes off my wife, sir, or I'll cut you to pieces and feed you to my hounds."
Galtero, a treacherous smile spreading on his lips, looked up at the taller man but said nothing. The Duchess huffed.
"Good night, General."
The pair marched off again to make another circuit of the midden heap, thoroughly convinced they were headed toward their destination straight as an arrow flies. But in the haze of a circle spell, they went nowhere except around and around. He could have stopped them the first time, but he relished the consternation in their eyes as they tried to grasp how he could repeatedly show up ahead of them. Their spelled minds would be able to make no sense of it. The next time by, their faces went as white as the snow before flushing to red. The Duchess stopped to a halt, and fists on her hips scowled at him. Tobias watched the white lace right in front of his face lift and fall with the heat of her indignation.
"Look here, you greasy little Nick! How dare you!"
Brogan's jaw locked rigid. With a grunt of rage, he snatched the white lace in both fists and ripped the front of her dress down to her waist. Lunetta's hand lifted, accompanied by a short incantation, and the Duke, his sword halfway out of its scabbard, stopped, rigid and unmoving, as if turned to stone. Only his eyes moved, to see the Duchess cry out as Galtero pinned both her arms behind her back, rendering her as immobile and helpless as he, though without the use of magic. Her back arched as Galtero twisted her arms in his powerful grip. Her nipples stood out stiff in the cold wind. Since he had forfeited his knife, Brogan drew his sword instead.
"What did you call me, you filthy little whore?"
"Nothing."
In the clutch of panic, she threw her head from side to side, her black curls whipping across her face.
"Nothing."
"My, my, lost your spine so easily."
What do you want?" she panted. "I'm no baneling. Leave me go. I'm no baneling."
"Of course you be no baneling. You be too pompous to be a baneling. But that makes you no less despicable or useful."
"Then it's him you want.
Yes, the Duke. He's the Baneling. Leave me go and I'll recount his crimes.
Brogan spoke through clenched teeth.
The Creator does not be served by false, self-serving confessions. But you will serve him nonetheless.
His cheek twitched with a grim smile.
You will serve the Creator through me. You'll do my bidding.
I'll do no such,
she cried out as Galtero tightened his grip.
Yes, all right, she gasped. Anything, just don't hurt me. Tell me what you want and I'll do it.
She tried unsuccessfully to back away as he put his face within inches of hers.
You will do as I tell you,
he said through gritted teeth. Her voice was choked with terror.
Yes, all right, you have my word,
he sneered derisively.
I wouldn't take the word of a whore like you. One who would sell anything, betray any principle. You will do my bidding because you have no choice.
He backed away, pinched her left nipple between his thumb and the knuckle of his first finger and stretched it out. As she wailed, her eyes opened wide. Brogan brought the sword up and, with a sawing cut, sliced off the nipple. Her scream drowned out the howl of the wind. Brogan placed the severed nipple in Lunetta's upturned palm. Her stubby fingers closed around it as her eyes closed in a shroud of magic. Soft sounds of an ancient incantation melded with the wind and the sound of the Duchess's shivering shrieks. Galtero held her weight as the wind wheeled around them. Lunetta's chanting rose in pitch as she tilted her head up to the inky sky. With her eyes shut tight, she summoned the spell around herself and the woman before her. The wind seemed to pull the words forth as Lunetta conjured in her Streganica tongue.
From earth to sky, from leaves to roots, from fire to ice and soul's own fruits, from light to dark, from wind to water, I claim this spirit and creator's daughter. Till the heart's blood boils, or the bones be ash, till the tallow be dust and death's teeth gnash, this one be mine. I cast her gnomon into a sunless glen, and pull this soul beyond its umbrous ken. Till her tasks be done, and the worms be fed, till the flesh be dust and the soul has fled, this one be mine.
Lunetta's voice lowered to a throaty chant.
Cock's hen, spider's ten, bezoar then, I make a thrall stew. Ox gall, castor and call, I make a chattel brew.
Her words drifted away and were lost in the wind, but her squat body bobbed as she went on, shaking her empty hand over the woman's head, and the other with the chunk of flesh over her own heart. The Duchess shuddered as tendrils of magic coiled around her, snaking into her flesh. She convulsed as its fangs sank into her very soul. Galtero had all he could do to hold her until at last she went limp in his grip. Despite the wind, there seemed a sudden silence. Lunetta opened her hand.
She be mine to bid. I pass my right to you.
She placed the now desiccated knob of flesh in Brogan's upturned palm.
She be yours now, my lord general.
Brogan closed the shriveled knot in his fist. The Duchess hung, glassy-eyed, by her arms behind her back. Her legs held her weight, but she shook with pain and cold. Blood oozed from her wound. Brogan tightened his fist.
Stop that shivering.
She looked into his eyes, and her glazed expression faded. She became still.
Yes, my lord general.
Brogan gestured to his sister.
Heal her.
Galtero watched with a glint of lust in his dark eyes as Lunetta cupped both hands around the woman's injured breast. Duke Lumholtz, too, watched with eyes nearly bulging out of their sockets. Lunetta's eyes closed again as she wove more magic, casting a soft spell. Blood trickled from between Lunetta's fingers until the woman's flesh began drawing together in the healing. Brogan's mind drifted as he waited. The Creator did indeed watch over his own. A day that had started with him at the brink of the greatest of triumphs was brought nearly to ruin, but in the end, he had proven that those who kept the Creator's cause in their hearts could prevail. Lord Rahl was going to find out just what happened to those who worshipped the Keeper, and the Imperial Order was going to find out just how valuable the Lord General of the Blood of the Fold was to them. Galtero, too, had proven his worth this day. The man was entitled to a trifle for his efforts. Lunetta used the Duchess's wrap to wipe off the blood, and then withdrew to reveal a perfectly whole breast, as flawless as the other, except it had no nipple. Brogan had that now. Lunetta motioned toward the Duke.
Am I to do him too, Lord General? Do you wish to have them both?
No. Brogan lifted a hand with a dismissive wave. No, I only need her. But he will play his part in my plan.
Rogan fixed his glare on the Duke's panicked eyes.
This be a dangerous city. As Lord Rawl told us today, there be dangerous creatures about, attacking innocent citizens who have no chance against them. Shocking. If only Lord Rawl were here to protect the Duke from such an attack.
I will see to it at once, Lord General, Galtero said.
No, I can take care of this. I thought you might like to entertain the Duchess here while I see to the Duke.
Galtero drew teeth across his lower lip as he gazed at the Duchess.
Yes, Lord General, very much. Thank you.
He tossed Brogan his knife.
You will need this. The soldiers told me that the creatures disemboweled their victims with a three-bladed knife. You will need to make three slices to duplicate the effect.
Brogan thanked his colonel. He could always count on Galtero's thoroughness. The woman's eyes moved back and forth between the three of them, but she said nothing.
Would you like me to compel her to cooperate?
A gruesome grin spread on Galtero's usually stony face.
And what would be the purpose of that, Lord General?
Better if she learned another lesson this night. Brogan nodded.
As you wish, then.
He looked to the Duchess.
My dear, I do not bid this of you. You are free to express your own true feelings about it to Galtero here.
She cried out when Galtero swept an arm around her waist.
Why don't we go over there in the darkness? I would not want to offend your delicate sensibilities, Duchess, by allowing you to see what be happening to your husband.
You can't, she cried out. I'll freeze in the snow. I must do my Lord General's bidding. I'll freeze.
Galtero patted her bottom.
Oh, you won't freeze. The midden will be warm under you.
She shrieked and tried to pull away, but Galtero already had a good grip on her. He tightened his other fist in her hair.
She be a lovely creature, Galtero. See that that beauty isn't marred, and don't be long. She yet has bidding to do for me. She will have to wear less paint, he said with a smirk. But since she has such talent with it, at least she can paint herself a nipple where her real one be missing. When I be finished with the Duke here and you be finished with her, then Lunetta has another spell to cast over her, a very special spell, a very rare and powerful spell.
Lunetta stroked her pretties as she watched his eyes. She knew what he wanted.
Then I will need something of his, something he has touched.
Brogan patted his pocket.
He accommodated us with a coin.
Lunetta nodded.
That will do.
The Duchess shrieked and flailed her arms as Galtero began dragging her off into the darkness. Brogan turned and waggled the knife in front of the tall Keltan's wild eyes.
And now, Duke Lumholtz, on to your part in the Creator's plan.
Chapter 16.
With Gratch looming over his shoulder, watching, Richard dribbled the red wax in a long puddle across the folded letter. He hastily set the candle and wax aside and picked up his sword, rolling the handle into the wax, making an impression of the hilt with its braided gold wire that spelled out the word truth. He was satisfied with the results. Kaelin and Zed would know the letter really was his. Egan and Ulick were sitting at the ends of the long curved desk, watching the empty room as if an army were about to storm the dais. His two huge guards preferred to stand. He was sure they must be tired and had insisted they sit. They said standing left them more prepared to react in the event of trouble. Richard had told them that he thought the 1,000 men outside, guarding, would probably raise a sufficient racket if there were an attack that the two would notice, even from a seated position, and still have time to get up out of their chairs and draw their swords. It was then that they had reluctantly sat down. Kara and Reyna stood beside the doors. When he had told them that they were welcome to sit too, they had dismissed the suggestion with haughty sniffs, and had said that they were stronger than Egan and Ulick and would stand. Richard had been in the middle of writing his letter and hadn't wanted to argue with them, so he had said that since they looked tired and slow, he was ordering them to stand so they would have sufficient time to come to his defense in case there was an attack. They were standing now, scowling at him, but he had caught glimpses of them smiling to each other, apparently pleased with the way they had been able to draw him into their game. Darkin Rawl had given the Mord Sith clearly delineated bounds, master and slave. Richard wondered if they were testing their limits with him, trying to find where the slack ended. Maybe they were simply gleeful to be able for the first time to act as they wished, on whim if they wanted. Richard also considered the possibility that their game was a test to try to ascertain if he was mad. Mord Sith were nothing if not accomplished at testing.
It troubled him that they might think him mad. This was the only way. They had to see that. Richard hoped Gratch wasn't as tired as the rest of them. The Gar had only just joined him that morning, so Richard didn't know how much sleep he had gotten, but his glowing green eyes looked bright and alert. Gars hunted mostly at night, so perhaps that explained his wakefulness. Whatever it was, Richard hoped it was true that Gratch wasn't tired and not simply his hope. Richard patted the furry arm.
"Gratch, come with me."
The Gar came to his feet, stretched his wings along with one leg, and followed Richard across the expanse of floor to one of the covered stairways up to the balcony. His four guards instantly came alert when Richard started off. He gestured for them to stay where they were. Egan and Ulick did. The two women did not, but instead followed him at a distance. Only the two lamps at the bottom of the covered stairway were lit, leaving the rest a gloomy tunnel. At the top, it opened onto a broad balcony, one side edged with a sinuous mahogany railing overlooking the main floor, and the other bordered by the bottom rim of the dome. Above a low white marble ledger, round windows half again as tall as he were spaced evenly around the enormous room. Richard looked out one of the windows to a snowy night. Snow, that could be trouble. At the bottom, the window was latched with a brass lever, and to the center of each side it was hinged on massive pins. He tested the lever and found it pivoted smoothly. Richard turned back to his friend.
"Gratch, I want you to listen to me very carefully. This is important."
Gratch nodded in earnest concentration. The two Mordsith watched from the shadows near the top of the stairway. Richard reached out and stroked the long lock of hair hanging on a leather thong around Gratch's neck, along with the dragon's tooth.
"This is a lock of Kaelin's hair."
Gratch nodded that he understood.
"Gratch, she's in danger."
Gratch frowned.
"You and I are the only ones who can see the Mriss with coming."
Gratch growled and covered his eyes with his claws, peeking out between, his sign for the Mrisswith. Richard nodded.
"That's right.
Gratch, she has no way to see them coming, like you and I do. If they go after her, she won't see them coming. They'll kill her." An uneasy, purling whine rose from Gratch's throat. His face brightened. He held out the lock of Kaelin's hair and then thumped his massive chest. Richard couldn't help laughing in wonder at the Gar's ability to grasp what he wanted.
"You guessed what I was thinking, Gratch. I would go to her myself to protect her, but that would take too much time, and she might be in danger right now. You're big, but you're not big enough to carry me. The only thing we can do is to have you go to her and protect her."
Gratch nodded his willingness with a grin that bared his fangs.
He seemed to suddenly realize what that meant and threw his arms around Richard.
"Gratch, log, Gratch, log."
Richard patted the Gar's back.
"I love you too, Gratch."
He had sent Gratch away once before in order to save the Gar's life, but Gratch hadn't understood. He had told Gratch he would never do that again. He hugged the Gar tight before pushing back.
"Gratch, listen to me."
The glowing green eyes were watering up.
"Gratch, Kaelin loves you as I do. She wants you to be with us the same as I do. The same way you want me to be with you. I want all of us to be together. I'm going to wait here, and I want you to go protect her and bring her back."
He smiled and stroked Gratch's shoulder.
"Then we'll all be together."
Gratch's prominent eyebrows drew into a dubious frown.
"Then when we're all together, you won't have just one friend, but you'll have both of us. And my grandfather Zed, too. He'll love having you around. You'll like him, too."
Gratch was looking a bit more enthusiastic.
"You'll have lots of friends to wrestle with you."
Before the Gar could pounce on him, Richard held him at arm's length. There was little in life that Gratch loved as much as wrestling.
"Gratch, I can't have fun wrestling with you now when I'm worried about the people I love. You understand, don't you? Would you want to have fun wrestling with someone else if I were in danger and needed you?"
Gratch considered it a moment, and then shook his head. Richard hugged him again. When they parted, Gratch spread his wings with a spirited flap.
"Gratch, can you fly in the snow?"
Gratch nodded.
"At night?"
The Gar nodded again, showing fangs behind his smile.
"All right, now you listen to me, so you'll be able to find her. I taught you directions, north and south and like that. You know directions. Good. Kaelin is to the southwest."
Richard pointed southwest, but Gratch beat him to it. Richard laughed.
"Good. She's to the southwest. She's going away from us, on her way to a city. She thought I was going to catch up with her and go to the city with her, but I can't. I must wait here. She has to come back here. She's with other people. There's an old man with white hair with her. He's my friend, my grandfather, Zed. There are other people with her, too. Many of them soldiers, a lot of people, do you understand?"
Gratch gave a sad frown. Richard rubbed his forehead.
trying to think through his weariness for a way to explain it.
Like tonight, Kara said from across the balcony. Like when you were talking to all the people tonight.
Yes, like that, Gratch.
He pointed at the main floor, circling his finger around.
All the people in here tonight when I was talking to them? About that many people will be with her.
Gratch at last grunted that he understood. Richard patted his friend's chest in relief. He held out the letter.
You have to take her this letter so that she'll understand why she has to come back here. It explains everything to her. It's very important that she gets this letter. Do you understand?
Gratch snatched up the letter in a claw. Richard raked back his hair.
No, that won't do. You can't carry it like that. You may need your claws, or you may drop it and lose it. Besides, it'll get all wet in the snow and she won't be able to read it.
His voice trailed off as he tried to think of a way for Gratch to carry the letter.
Lord Rawl!
He turned and Reyna tossed him something through the dim light. When he caught it, he realized it was the leather pouch that had carried General Trimek's letter all the way from the People's Palace in Dahara. Richard grinned.
Thanks, Reyna.
Smirking, she shook her head. Richard put his letter, his hopes, everyone's hopes, in the leather pouch and hung its thong around Gratch's neck. Gratch gurgled with pleasure at the new addition to his collection before again studying the lock of Kaelin's hair.
Gratch, it's possible that for some reason she may not be with all those people. I have no way of telling what may happen between now and when you reach her. It may be hard to find her.
He watched Gratch stroking the lock of hair. Richard had seen Gratch catch a fluttermouse in midair on a moonless night. He would be able to find people on the ground, but he still had to have a way to know which people were the right ones.
Gratch, you haven't ever seen her before, but she has long hair like this. Not many women do, and I told her all about you. She won't be afraid when she sees you, and she'll call you by name. That's how you can know it's really her. She'll know your name.
Satisfied at last with all his instructions, Gratch flapped his wings and bounced on the balls of his feet, eager to be off, so he could bring Kaelin back to Richard. Richard swung the window open. The snow howled in. One last time, the two friends hugged.
She's been running away from here for 2 weeks, and will continue on until you reach her. It may take you a while to catch her, many days, so don't get discouraged.
And be careful, Gratch. I don't want you to get hurt. I want you back here with me so I can wrestle with you, you big furry beast. Gratch giggled, a fearsome yet happy noise, then climbed up on the ledge.
Gratch, log, Gratch, hog.
Richard waved. I love you too, Gratch. Be careful. Safe journey. Gratch waved back, and then bounded out into the night. Richard stood watching the cold blackness, even though the Gar had disappeared almost instantly. Richard felt a sudden, hollow emptiness. Though he was surrounded by people, it wasn't the same. They were there only because they were bonded to him, not because they really believed in him or in what he was doing. Kaelin had been fleeing for 2 weeks, and it would probably take the Gar at least another week, maybe two, to finally catch her. Richard couldn't imagine it taking less than a month or more for Gratch to find Kaelin and Zed, and for all of them to return to Adendril. It could be closer to 2 months. He already had a knot in his gut, anxious for his friends to be back with him. They had been parted too long. He wanted this lonesome feeling to end, and only their presence could banish it. After closing the window, he turned back to the room. The two Mord Sith were standing right behind him.
"Gratch really is your friend," Kara said.
Richard only nodded, not wanting to test the lump in his throat. Kara glanced at Reyna before speaking to him.
"Lord Rawl, we have been discussing this matter, and have decided that it would be best if you were in Dahara, where you will be safe. We can leave an army here to guard your queen when she arrives, and escort her back to Dahara to be with you.
I've already told you, I must remain here. The Imperial Order wants to conquer the world. I'm a wizard and must stand against that."
"You said you didn't know how to use your gift. You said you knew nothing about how to wield magic."
"I don't, but my grandfather Zed does. I have to stay here until he arrives, then he can teach me what I need to know so I can fight the Order and keep them from taking over the world."
Kara dismissed the matter with a wave of her hand.
"Someone always wants to rule those they don't already rule. From the safety of Dahara, you can direct your war against the Order. When the representatives from the palaces return from their homelands to offer their surrender, then the Midlands will be yours. You will rule the world, and without having to be in harm's view. Once the lands surrender, then the Imperial Order will be finished."
Richard started for the stairway.
"You don't understand. There's more to it than that. Somehow, the Imperial Order has infiltrated the New World and has gained allies.
New World?
Kara asked as she and Raina started after him.
What is the New World?
Westland, where I'm from, the Midlands and Dahara make up the New World.
They make up all the world,
Kara said with finality.
Spoken like a fish in a pond, Richard said, sliding his hand lightly down the silken smooth railing as he descended the stairs. You think that's all there is to the world? Just the pond you see? And it all just ends at an ocean or mountain range or desert or something?
Only the spirits know.
Kara stopped at the bottom of the steps and cocked her head.
What do you think? That there are other lands beyond these? Other ponds?
She swept her Aegeal around in a circle.
Out there somewhere?
Richard threw his hands up.
I don't know, but I do know that to the south is the old world.
Raina folded her arms.
To the south is a barren waste.
Richard started across the expanse of floor.
Embedded in the wasteland was a place called the Valley of the Lost, and running through it from ocean to ocean, a barrier called the Towers of Perdition. The towers were set in place 3,000 years ago by wizards with unimaginable power. The spells of those towers have prevented almost anyone from crossing for the last 3,000 years, and so the old world beyond was forgotten in time.
Kara flashed a skeptical frown as their boot strikes echoed around the dome.
How do you know this?
I was there, in the old world, at the Palace of the Prophets, in a great city called Tanamura.
Truly?
Raina asked. Richard nodded. She added a frown to Kara's.
And if no one can get through, then how did you?
It's a long story. But basically, these women, the Sisters of the Light, took me there. We could cross because we have the gift, but not strong enough to draw the destructive power of the spells. No one else could get through, and so the old and new worlds remained separated by the towers and their spells. Now the barrier between the old and new world has fallen. No one is safe. The Imperial Order is from the old world. It's a long way, but they will come, and we must be prepared.
Kara eyed him suspiciously.
And if this barrier has been in place for 3,000 years, how did this come to happen now?
Richard cleared his throat as they followed him up to the dais.
Well, I guess it's my fault. I destroyed the tower's spells. They no longer stand as a barrier. The wasteland has been restored to the green meadowland it once was.
The two women appraised him silently. Kara leaned past him to speak to Raina.
And he says he doesn't know how to use magic.
Raina shifted her gaze to Richard.
So, what you are saying is that you have caused this war? You made it possible?
No. Look, it's a long story.
Richard raked back his hair.
Even before the barrier was down, they were gaining allies here and had started their war. Ebenicia was destroyed before the barrier came down. But now there's nothing to hold them back or slow them down. Don't underestimate them. They use wizards and sorceresses. They wish to destroy all magic.
They wish to destroy all magic, yet they use magic themselves? Lord Rall, that makes no sense,
Kara scoffed.
You want me to be the magic against magic. Why?
He pointed to the men on either end of the dais.
Because they can only be the steel against steel. It often takes magic to destroy magic.
Richard gestured, his finger including the two women.
You have magic, and to what purpose?
To counter magic.
As Mord Sith, you are able to appropriate the magic of another and turn it against them. It's the same with them. They use magic to help them destroy magic, just as Darkin Rall used you to torture and kill those with magic who opposed him.
You have magic. The Order will want to destroy you.
I have magic. They'll want to destroy me. All Daharans have magic through the bond. Eventually, the Order will see that and decide to exterminate the taint. Sooner or later, they'll come to crush Dahara, just as they would crush the Midlands.
The Daharan troops will crush them instead,
Ulix said over his shoulder, as if stating with confidence that the sun would set this day as it always did. Richard shot a glare at the man's back.
Until I came along, Daharans joined with them, and in their name annihilated Ebenicia. The Daharans here in Adendril followed the commands of the Imperial Order.
His four guards fell silent. Kara stared at the ground before her feet as Raina let out a disheartened sigh.
In the confusion of the war, Kara said at last, as if thinking aloud, some of our troops out in the field would have felt the bond break,
just as some of those at the palace did when you killed Darkin Rall. They would be like lost souls without a new Master Rall to take up their bond. They may have simply joined with someone who would give them direction, take up the place of the bond. Now they have their bond back. We have a Master Rall. Richard slumped down in the Mother Confessor's chair. That's what I'm hoping.
All the more reason to return to Dahara, Rena said. We must protect you, so you can continue to be the Master Rall, and our people will not join with the Imperial Order. If you are killed and the bond is broken, then the army will once again turn to the Order for direction. Better to leave the Midlands to their own battles. It is not your job to save them from themselves.
Everyone in the Midlands, then, will fall under the sword of the Imperial Order, Richard said in a soft voice. They will be treated as you were treated by Darkin Rall. No one will ever again be free. We can't let that happen, as long as there's any chance we can stop them. It must be done now, before they gain any more of a foothold here in the Midlands. Kara rolled her eyes.
The spirits save us from a man with a just cause. It is not up to you to lead them.
If I don't, then in the end everyone will live under one rule, the orders, Richard said. All people will be their chattel for all time. Tyrants don't tire of tyranny. The room rang with silence. Richard thumped his head against the chair back. He was so tired he didn't think he could keep his eyes open much longer. He didn't know why he was bothering to try to convince them. They didn't seem to understand or care about what it was he was trying to do. Kara leaned against the desk and wiped a hand across her face.
We don't want to lose you, Lord Rall. We don't want to go back to the way things were.
She sounded on the verge of tears.
We'd like being able to do simple things, like make a joke and laugh. We could never do such things before. We always lived in fear that if we said the wrong thing, we would be beaten or worse. Now that we have seen another way, we don't want to go back to that. If you throw your life away for the Midlands, then we will.
Kara, all of you, listen to me. If I don't do this, then in the end, that's what will happen. Can't you see that? If I don't unite the lands under a strong rule, under a just law and leadership, then the Order will take everything, one chunk at a time. If the Midlands fall under their shadow, then that shadow will steal across Dahara, too. And in the end, all the world will fall into darkness. I don't do this because I want to, but because I can see that I have a chance to accomplish the task. If I don't try, there will be no place for me to hide. They will find me and kill me. I don't want to conquer and rule people. I just want to live a quiet life. I want to have a family and live in peace. That's why I must show the lands of the Midlands that we're strong and will sanction no favoritism or bickering, that we're not going to be lands in an alliance, standing as one only when it's expedient, but that we truly are one. They must be confident we will stand for what's right so that they'll feel secure joining us, so they will know that there's a place for them with us, and so that they'll be heartened by knowing that they will not have to fight alone if they wish to fight for freedom. We must be a powerful force they will trust in enough to join. The room fell into an icy silence. Richard closed his eyes as he laid his head back against the chair. They thought him mad. It was no use. He was simply going to have to order them to do the things he needed, and stop worrying about if they liked it or not, much less cared. Kara finally spoke.
Lord Rall.
He opened his eyes to see her standing with her arms folded, and a grim expression on her face.
I will not change your child's swaddling clothes, nor bathe it, nor burp it, nor make foolish sounds to it.
Richard closed his eyes and laid his head back against the chair again as he chuckled to himself. He remembered the time when he was back home, before all this started, and the midwife had come in a lather for Zed. Elaine Seaton, a young woman, not a whole lot older than Richard, was having her first child, and it was not going well. The midwife had spoken in hushed tones as she turned her broad back to Richard and leaned toward Zed. Before Richard knew Zed was his grandfather, he only knew him as his best friend. At the time, Richard hadn't known Zed was a wizard, nor did anyone else. Everyone simply knew him as old Zed, the cloud reader, a man of considerable knowledge about the most ordinary and the most peculiar of things, about rare herbs and human ailments, about healing and where rain clouds had traveled from, about where to dig a well and when to start digging a grave, and he knew about childbirth. Richard knew Elaine.
She taught him to dance so that he might ask a girl at the Midsummer Festival for a turn. Richard had wanted to learn until, faced with the prospect of actually holding a woman in his arms, he was afraid he might break her or something. He wasn't sure what, but everyone always told him he was strong and had to take care not to hurt people. When he changed his mind and tried to beg off, Elaine laughed and swept him up in her arms and started twirling him about while humming a merry tune. Richard didn't know much about the business of birthing babies, but from what he had heard, he had no desire to go anywhere near Elaine's house while it was going on. He headed for the door, intending on a walk in the opposite direction from trouble. Zed snatched up his bag of herbs and potions, grabbed Richard's sleeve, and said, "Come with me, my boy, I may need you." Richard insisted he could be of no help, but when Zed had his mind set on something, he could make stone seem malleable by comparison. As Zed shoved him out the door, he said,
"You never know, Richard, you might even learn something."
Elaine's husband, Henry, was off with a crew cutting ice for the inns, and because of the weather, hadn't returned yet from his deliveries to nearby towns. There were several women in the house, but they were all in with Elaine. Zed told Richard to make himself busy tending the fire and heating some water, and that he was likely to be a while. Richard sat in the cold kitchen, sweat running down his scalp, while he listened to the most horrifying screams he had ever heard. There were muffled words of comfort from the midwife and the other women, but mostly there were the screams. He stoked the fire, melting snow in a big kettle, to give himself an excuse to go outside. He told himself that Elaine and Henry might need more wood, what with a new baby and all, so he cut and chopped a good-sized pile. It did no good. He could still hear Elaine's screams. It wasn't the way they put voice to pain, but the way they were seared with panic that made Richard's heart hammer. Richard knew Elaine was going to die. A midwife wouldn't have come for Zed unless there was serious trouble. Richard had never seen a dead person. He didn't want the first to be Elaine. He remembered her laughter when she had taught him to dance. His face had been red the whole time, but she pretended not to notice. And then, while he sat at the table, staring off, thinking the world was a very terrible place indeed, there was a last scream, more agonizing than the rest, that sent a shiver down his spine. It died out in forlorn misery. He squeezed his eyes shut in the dragging silence, damming in the tears. Digging a grave in the frozen ground was going to be near to impossible, but he promised himself that he would do it for Elaine. He didn't want them to keep her frozen body in the undertaker's shed until spring. He was strong. He would do it if it took him a month. She had taught him to dance. The door to the bedroom squeaked open, and Zed shuffled out carrying something.
"Richard, come here."
He handed over a gory mess with tiny arms and legs.
"Wash him gently."
"What? How do I do that?" Richard stammered.
"In warm water," Zed bellowed. "Bags, my boy, you did heat water, didn't you?"
Richard pointed with his chin.
"Not too hot now, just lukewarm. Then swaddle him in those blankets and bring him back into the bedroom."
"But, Zed, the women, they should do it, not me. Dear spirits, can't the women do it?" Zed, his white hair in disarray, peered at him with one eye.
"If I wanted the women to do it, my boy, I wouldn't have asked you now, would I?"
In a flurry of robes, he was off. The door to the bedroom banged closed. Richard was afraid to move, for fear he would crush the little thing. It was so tiny, he could hardly believe it was real. And then something happened. Richard began to grin. This was a person, a spirit, new to the world. He was beholding magic. When he took the bathed and blanketed marvel into the bedroom, he was moved to tears to see that Elaine was very much alive. His trembling legs were hardly able to hold him.
"Elaine, you sure can dance,"
was the only thing he could think to say.
"How did you manage to do such a wondrous thing?"
The women around the bed stared at him as if he were daft. Elaine smiled through her exhaustion.
"Someday, you can teach Bradley to dance, Bright Eyes."
She held her hands out. Her grin grew as Richard gently put her child into her arms.
"Well, my boy, seems you figured it out after all,"
Zed lifted an eyebrow.
"Learned anything?"
Bradley must be 10 by now, and called him Uncle Richard. As he listened to the quiet, returning from the memories, Richard thought about what Kara had said.
"Yes, you will," he told her at last in a gentle tone. "Even if I have to command it, you will. I want you to feel the wonder of a new life, a new spirit in your arms, so that you can feel magic other than that jeel at your wrist. You will bathe him, and swaddle him, and burp him, so that you will know your tender care is needed in this world, and that I would trust my own child in that care. You will make foolish sounds to him, so that you can laugh with joy at the hope for the future, and perhaps forget that you have killed people in the past. If you can understand none of the rest, I hope you can understand at least this much of my reasons for what I must do." He relaxed back in the chair, letting his muscles slacken for the first time in hours. The hush seemed to hum around him. He thought about Kaelin and let his mind drift. Kara whispered through tight lips and tears, a soft sound almost lost in the huge room and its tomb-like silence. "If you get yourself killed trying to rule the world, I will personally break every bone in your body." Richard felt his cheeks tighten with a smile. The darkness behind his eyelids swirled with dark plumes of color. He was acutely aware of the chair around him, Mother Confessor's chair, Kaelin's chair. From it, she had ruled the Midlands Alliance. He could feel the eyes of the first Mother Confessor and her wizard glaring down at him as he sat in the hallowed place after having demanded the surrender of the Midlands and the end of an alliance that they had forged to be the foundation for an everlasting peace. He had come into this war fighting for the cause of the Midlands. He now commanded his former enemy and had placed his sword at the throats of his allies. In one day, he had turned the world upside down. Richard knew he was breaking the alliance for the right reasons, but he agonized about what Kaelin was going to think. She loved him and would understand, he told himself. She had to. Dear spirits, what was Zed going to think? His arms rested heavily where Kaelin's had. He imagined her arms around him, now as they had been the night before, in that place between worlds. He didn't think he had ever been that happy in his whole life, or felt so loved. He thought he could hear someone telling him he should find a bed, but he was already asleep. Chapter 17. Despite returning to find several thousand brutish Daharan troops surrounding his palace, Tobias was in a good mood. Things were turning out splendidly. Not the way he had originally planned that morning, but splendidly nonetheless. The Daharans made no effort to hinder his entrance, but warned him that he had better not come out again that night. Their effrontery was galling, but he was more interested in the old woman Ettore was preparing than in the Daharan's lack of protocol. He had questions and was impatient for the answers. She would be ready to give them by now. Ettore was well practiced at his craft. Even though this was the first time he had been trusted to handle the preparations for a questioning without a more experienced brother overseeing his hand, that hand had already proven to be talented and steady at the task. Ettore was more than ready for the responsibility. Tobias shook the snow from his cape onto the ruby and gold carpet, not bothering to clean his boots before he marched across the spotless anteroom toward the corridors leading to the stairs. The wide halls were lit by cut glass lamps, hung before polished silver reflectors that sent wavering rays of light dancing over the gilt woodwork. Crimson-caped guards patrolling the palace touched fingertips to their foreheads as they bowed. Tobias didn't trouble himself with returning the salutes. With Galtero and Lunetta right behind, he took the steps two at a time. While the walls on the main level were trimmed with ornate paneling adorned with portraits of Nicobarese royalty and decorated tapestries depicting their fabled, largely fictitious exploits, the walls on the lower level were simple stone block, cold to the eye as well as the touch. The room he was headed for, though, would be warm. As he knuckled his mustache, he winced at the ache in his bones. The cold seemed to make his joints ache more of late. He admonished himself to be more concerned with the Creator's work and less with such mundane matters. The Creator had blessed him with more than a good amount of help this night. It must not be wasted. On the upper levels, the halls had been well guarded by the men of the Fist, but downstairs, the drab corridors were empty. There was no way into or out of the palace from the lower levels. Galtero, ever watchful, eyed the length of the hall outside the door to the questioning room. Lunetta waited patiently with a smile. Tobias had told her she had done well, especially with the last spell, and she was a glowing reflection of his good graces. Tobias stepped into the room and came face to face with Ettore's familiar wide grin. The eyes, however, were filmed with death. Tobias froze. Ettore was hanging by a cord, tied to either end of an iron pin driven through his ears. His feet dangled just clear of a dark, coagulated puddle.
There was a neat slice from a razor all the way around the middle of his neck. Below that, every inch of him had been skinned. Pale strips of it lay to the side in an oozing heap.